Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUND with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This morning, our guest is Kate Cavett, and she has produced, I guess, I don't know whether you say written or not, a book called Voices of Rondo, Oral Histories of St. Paul's Historic Black Community. It was first published in 2005. It is in print again with the University of Minnesota Press. And Kate, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
So tell me, I'm sorry, please go ahead.
Well, to answer your question, I see myself as an oral historian, so I'm a facilitator in many respects of the oral histories and to get it into a book, because the words in this book I didn't write. They are directly from the individuals who shared their stories about Rondo.
Kate, tell us a little bit about what the story was that first piqued your curiosity. You said at some point, there's a story here, I want to know more about it. And you elected to go the oral history route as an oral historian. I suppose that makes sense. You know, instead of maybe doing research and writing down quotes and writing a book in that way. What was your impetus to originally prepare this volume?
I lived about six blocks from what was Rondo. And you'd always hear the stories. And there's a celebration called Rondo Days. And I kept asking myself, so what's the big deal? And most of the things that I could find that were researched or written were about how it destroyed the neighborhood. But I kept going, so who cares? What was the big deal about the neighborhood? And I like stories in the original version. So I started collecting stories and creating an advisory committee about who to interview, and it was about wanting not to hear about how the neighborhood was destroyed, but wanting to hear about what the neighborhood really was, because it was a rich, vibrant, exciting neighborhood that supported its neighbors, that loved living where they lived, that loved being St. Paulites or living in Minnesota. Despite the fact that most of the neighborhood was very diverse, and after World War II, it was predominantly a black neighborhood.
And oral history is different than other kinds of historic records, than other kinds of interviewing people, for example, to prepare a book. Can you delve a little deeper into the idea of what an oral history gives us that we can't get anywhere else? And as an oral historian, it's obviously something that you're very committed to.
It is. Oral history is recording the voice of the storyteller. So the first interview that I did was with Melvin Carter Sr., and he said, well, I'm not much of a talker. I don't really tell my stories. I don't like talking to people. He was a rather shy man. His grandson, now the current mayor of St. Paul, is not as shy as his grandpa was. But, you know, you start asking him specific stories about his family, about what it was like growing up, and he has the memories. And so when I would do an oral history, I would record the interview, then transcribe it verbatim. For the book, I would edit it in taking the questions out, so it was just the person speaking. So the advantage of oral history is that for each of the storytellers, you hear the tempo of their voice. You hear their style of speaking. You hear the way they tell the story, not just what the story is. An example would be, one of the oral histories is Willie Felix. Willie Felix was a Pullman porter. Willie Felix had a 7th or 8th grade education out of Mississippi, an incredible memory, obviously a bright man, because he could remember the wage that he made all the way through his life. But he spoke in a very much, some people would call it a dialect, some people might call it Ebonics, of a Southern Black manner. So we transcribed the way he spoke. You contrast him to Bill Finney or Corky Finney, who at the time we did the interviews was police chief of St. Paul. He had a college degree. He grew up in Rondo and had become one of the leaders of St. Paul. And he spoke in traditional, strong Minnesota English. Both incredibly valuable oral histories, both significant contributions to the story of Rondo. But in an oral history, you hear the differences of their speech.
Kate, as a journalist for many years, I know that the minute you set down recording equipment, there's a change in the way people are relating to you. How do you overcome that so that people feel comfortable? You know, either they're very conscious of the recorder and they're kind of playing to the recorder, or they kind of, as you mentioned, they get shy or they sort of clam up. How did you draw people out so that they were comfortable telling their stories?
I think for me, it was about getting very comfortable with the equipment myself. And once I get it on and I get it going, I just fully engage and fully listen to them. And most people within a very short period of time would get beyond it. They'd forget that there was a recorder going there. That's why I actually do audio and I don't do video, because I haven't seen people be able to get beyond the video camera.
It is a lot trickier, isn't it? Now, of course, now I have to ask you, I feel compelled to ask this question from my perspective. You did work on an audio documentary. My question for you is, should oral histories all be either podcasts, radio programs, or at the very least come with a CD or some kind of a recording of the people telling these stories in their own voices with the kind of editing that you talked about? Because, you know, of course, we do that in radio, too. We edit out the questions so that the person can present their narrative in an unbroken form, if possible. So should oral histories all come with some kind of an attached jump drive or something with the audio on them?
I think whenever possible, it certainly enhances it, but it's whatever we can do to get the stories out there, because sometimes we can't, you know, it's not possible, but whatever is possible to get the stories out there and to get the voices out there if possible. You know, if the choice is, well, we can do it this way and we can't do the podcast, but we can get something out there, then we've got the story out there, then we do that. And oral history is not the only way of getting stories out there. I just did a family oral history project, and that's what we originally contracted for. And then they decided they wanted it rewritten in a good English format, or a good they didn't want just their father's voice as he speaks. They wanted it rewritten in as it would be a well-written document. So that's what we did. And for that family, it was appropriate. For other families, they like hear the original voice.
Right, right. Which can either bring back a memory, you know, whether it's a good memory or a bad memory. What can people within a culture, I'm thinking about, what can people... maybe who grew up in the Rondo neighborhood, or who know people who grew up in the Rondo neighborhood, or maybe grew up in neighborhoods similar to that neighborhood, take from this collection of oral histories? And what could people from outside that neighborhood, or not a part of the culture, maybe even the people that were saying, oh, you know, this has ruined the neighborhood, what can other people take from an oral history like this?
I think the Rondo Oral History Project, or the Voices of Rondo, people can take an understanding that Minnesota had its diversity and Minnesota has its diversity, that not all people in Minnesota grew up the same, had the same experiences. The racism, and I mentioned Willie Freelix, I mean, he loved living in Minnesota because he said he wasn't afraid that he would be killed. If he worked a job washing dishes and went home at midnight, he wasn't afraid he'd be killed. But in Mississippi, he would have been afraid he'd be killed. And yet there was a lot of racism in this country earlier. St. Paul still has its racism. But, you know, if you lived in Rondo, you couldn't go eat in many of the restaurants downtown. If you came into town and you were a black person and you came in on the train, you'd ask one of the black red caps where you could stay because you couldn't stay in the hotels. So I think people would take with them an understanding of the diversity of our state and an understanding of the strength and the resiliency of people who were discriminated against, but it didn't keep them down. One of the things I love about the book is it shows that the young people that grew up in Rondo went on to become the leaders in St. Paul. When their parents were raising them, they were not leaders. You couldn't be black and you couldn't be a predominant leader in St. Paul. Now they've gone on to be superintendent, assistant superintendent of schools, police chiefs, significant leaders in our community. Mayors, or the great-grandchild, a mayor of St. Paul.
Well, Kate, it's a fascinating read, and thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Kate Cavett, our guest this morning. She is an oral historian, and her book called Voices of Rondo, Oral Histories of St. Paul's Historic Black Community, has just been reissued by the University of Minnesota Press.